Welcome to the Lex Tech in 10 podcast, a resource for Lexington teachers to learn about innovative technology to use in your classroom, as well as tips and tricks to streamline your workload. I'm Lisa Rhodes, one of the elementary digital learning coaches.
I'm Rachel Kuberry, the district's assistive technology specialist.
And I'm Ann Kim Tenner, the high school digital learning coach.
Just a reminder, the opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts and guests. Make sure you check out the show notes for more information, resources, and other podcasts. Hello, and welcome to episode 14. I am Lisa Rhodes. This is our first non-studio recorded podcast since remote learning began. We wish you all well. In this episode, Rachel will talk with middle school digital learning coach Howard Wolke about copyright, student privacy, and fair use. Following their discussion, Anne will spotlight the new Lexington Public School Tech Resources websites. And now for an announcement. Lately, many companies are offering free subscriptions to otherwise paid products until June 30th. We request that you fill out the Student Data Privacy and Technology Approval Form prior to using any with students. You can find this form on the Lex Communicate webpage, which is found under the staff link on the main LPS website. Linked in this request form is a document titled LPS Software and App Review Process, which outlines how the apps and software are vetted to ensure student data privacy is protected and that there is compliance with COPPA, or Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. Please reach out to your digital learning coach if you have any questions.
All right. This week I have Howard Wolke here, who is the DLC over at Diamond. Hello, Howard.
Hi, Rachel. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, have a nice view from my home office, which is my bed, and look out the window to see my kids playing in the yard. So it's not a bad setup.
Very nice.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us today. Howard,
my pleasure.
Here in our first episode since remote learning started, but he was on the docket way before for the topic of student data privacy, which is extra timely now that we're doing so much more with technology through this remote learning period. So we are here to talk about the very exciting topic of student data privacy.
Great. I'm excited.
So Howard, tell me, for people who haven't thought about student data privacy before, like, what does it mean?
Yeah, so student data privacy, data, it's easy to think of data as just being your name and address. But when we're talking about online behaviors, data is so much more than that. It's everything from your name, your email address, your face, your voice, your even your actions online, the way you click can be considered part of your data. And so really what student data privacy is all about is this idea of how do we make sure that the data that our students are putting online, you know, they're not adults yet, how do we make sure that that data is safe and secure and is not being used against them or targeting them in some way, shape, or form?
And so some of this, I think, falls on the district and the tools we're picking and like big things that we think about for those big tools like G Suite and the Google tools we use. But I think where it becomes more complicated for teachers is as they look at those smaller one-trick pony kind of tools and how those tools interact, because that's when teachers are, the onus is a little bit more on the teacher when you're exploring that 1Z, 2Z tool, right?
Yeah, so, you know, the onus is on the teacher. The onus is on everybody, frankly.
It is.
And, you know, the district has come up with a few tools and we're working with other groups, but it's really about everybody kind of taking into consideration what is being collected about my students. So yeah. when you have students go onto a website and log in, well, it's collecting that data. When they are answering questions, even they're just doing research, when they're using, you know, all these tools, whether it's a teacher-driven tool or a district-driven tool, data is being collected. So a lot of what we have to do and we have to think about is not just is data being collected, because the answer there is almost always yes.
Almost always yes.
But rather, what is being done with that data and how is the company using that data?
How do we know?
So the most honest answer possible is we don't actually know. We have to.
Thanks, Howard. Podcast episode over.
we have to trust the companies to some extent. I know that for a lot of people, and myself at times included, that can be hard to, you know, we don't believe that these companies are being completely honest in what they're saying. But we have to have a little bit of trust. And then we look at things like their terms of service.
Okay.
So usually on most websites, you'll have two different documents. There's a terms of service, which talks about who's allowed to use the tool and what the tool is.
Okay.
And then a second document, which is the privacy policy.
Yep.
And so it's, you kind of, the privacy policy is obviously more about student data privacy, but you do need to look at both of these things. There's a whole slew of federal laws with a wide variety of acronyms, including COPPA and CIPA and, you know, and HIPAA and all these other wonderful acronyms that are out there that govern what data can be collected, what has to be done with the data. You know, and so this is kind of how we need to look at it and see, okay, this is what this company is promising to do with the data they're collecting or not collecting. The term of service is a great place to start with a lot of times, especially for the younger kids, because the Childhood Online Privacy Protection Act, COPPA or COPA, I've heard both pronunciations, basically talks about how when somebody's under the age of 13, companies have to secure their data in a whole variety of ways. If they're collecting any kind of data, it has to be secured.
So I've heard you say a couple things through our conversation so far that are like things for people to look for. And one of them earlier was like, look for a sign-in. Like if a student has to log into this tool, that's a real strong indicator that the tool is collecting student data. And another thing that you said right now was that age 13 with the COPPA or COPPA is another like look for when you're looking at the student data privacy or the privacy policies.
Yeah. So the age thing is usually actually in the terms of service.
Terms of service. Got it.
Because usually what will happen is a company will say,
because they're not even allowed to use it.
Exactly. And, and that's why you see on whether you're signing up for Google or Facebook or anything else, it always says, are you 13 or over?
Yep.
And it's just a yes or no. And yeah, people lie. But that's the company basically covering themselves, saying we don't collect any data from anybody that we know is under 13.
So Howard, help me understand. Do you know why it's 13 instead of more traditional ages that we have set? Like 16, 18, 21?
I honestly have
no clue. I never thought of that before.
Yeah, so the law was written, it was written in 1998 or 99. It was signed in 2000, or it was enacted in 2000, which of course is before most of the modern digital age that we're
dealing with,
which is its own problem. It does get into, the law actually gets into 13 and then 18 as a separate age.
Okay, there is, okay.
Yeah, so 13 is about data collection.
Yep.
But 18 is about really what you're allowed to see and be exposed to online.
Okay.
So when it comes to filters, when it comes to, you know, for example, if you look at the terms of service for any of these streaming music services, Pandora, Spotify, those things, they all say you have to be 18 or over unless you have parental permission, in which case it's 13 or over.
Okay, so there is, we look at the 13 a lot for schools because that is a cutoff that hits a lot of our students. So there is sort of another cutoff for 18.
Right.
For certain tools.
That's more of a content cutoff rather than a privacy cutoff.
Okay. And so if you're in high school, if you're a high school teacher, good news, because that 13 and older works in your favor.
Sort of.
Middle school, I think, can be hard because you have kids fall on both sides of it. And then elementary, you know that you don't have any 13-year-olds.
Right. But it'd be nice to say, okay, done. If I'm a high school teacher, I don't have to worry about any of this stuff and I can move on.
That's true.
We can't really.
Right.
Because we are still a public school system. We are still representatives of the state, and of the town. And so we have to also do best practices here. And even for our students who are over 13, we have to think about how their data is being used as a district. If a parent, if an individual who is over 13 wants to sign up for their own thing and do their own thing, we obviously can't stop that.
Right.
But we have to, what are we saying to our students? This is what we want you to do. And then how does that impact how their data is shared online? And that's where the privacy policies come in, actually, usually.
Yeah. But there might be some tools that we use with older kids that we don't use with younger kids because of data privacy.
Absolutely. Right. And as a middle school person, middle school DLC, this is,
best of both worlds. Thing.
And so eighth grade teachers tend to be able to use more tools than sixth grade teachers or seventh grade, because seventh grade is right in the middle of that time. And, halfway through the year is when they're turning 13, a lot of them. So it's a challenging grade.
So help me understand what resources teachers have available to help educate themselves about student data privacy and do right by their students and families to make sure they're picking good tools. District has done a lot of work on this year. So one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about the terms of service and privacy policies was that's a great place for teachers to start. But some teachers open up those documents and are like, I don't understand all the words on this page. So I know that some people reach out to their DLC to take a look at the documents with them.
Yeah, so for sure, that's, I would say that's your first resource is your DLC, because we've actually now all kind of looked a little bit more into what student data privacy means. We've started really looking into this as a group. And so absolutely talk to your DLC about it. I agree those terms of service are long and they're legal and it's a contract and there's a lot there that means nothing to you. And it's, defining things. Even when I'm looking through that, half the time I just do a search for years.
Right.
I can see where it says years old.
Right.
Because that's usually in there. So definitely reach out to your DLC and see what they know about a certain tool. And then on top of that, the district is part of something called the Student Data Privacy Consortium.
Yeah, I love this.
This is a wonderful, wonderful group. It's a national group, but they have chapters in every state, or most states, actually. I don't think it's every state. But they have chapters in Massachusetts.
Yep.
Where essentially school districts go to, they work with this consortium, and they say, okay, we are looking to use this tool. Does the creator of the tool, the software company, have they signed an agreement with us, with anybody else, saying that yes, we promise to protect student data privacy?
Right.
So you go to their website, and I know there are links everywhere.
Yeah, and we'll put the link in the show notes. So if you want to check it out, it's the first place I go when teachers ask me, can I use this tool regarding student data privacy? It's a super easy tool to search both by tool and by district. So you can see what Lexington's using. As we've really moved forward with the remote learning, we have increased the number of tools that we use a lot. And absolutely. So I find it a little tricky to search on the website by Lexington because it's so robust now. So I often search by tool. It's a faster search for me, but the website is really fantastic.
That's the primary way I search, actually. I don't search by Lexington. I search by tool because especially I would argue for teachers where, a high school teacher is not going to be using Brain Pop Jr. as an example. They're just not. They're not going to be, whereas an elementary school teacher may not be using something like Desmos. As a graphing calculator type thing. So if you just go, you can search by district, you can search by resource, and there's a whole long, long list of them there.
Yeah.
And you can see, okay, this is what's approved, this is what isn't. And you see who's approved it and who hasn't. So, I'm on the website right now, actually, and you know, you go to a tool. There's one that I know has been challenging for us, Canva, which I personally, outside of school, even I love it as a tool. You know, but you can go to the database, you go to the database and look at Canva, and you see that almost most school systems have not approved it. And it says they're in bright red, not approved. And it's because Canva's not going to be signing these documents right now. And so that's kind of the first line of defense. What you do see sometimes in the database, though, is instead of, it may say active because there's a guardian release form that the school system has come up with.
Yeah, so like an extra layer of.
We don't do that in Lexington, though. There's real concern in Lexington, and understandably, that this can raise issues of equity. So if one kid in a class of 25 does not get that,
then you're really singling out that kid and their family choices,
which is not, it's just not okay.
Yeah.
So we don't, you know, you may see that and you go, oh wait, I can get a sign off form. We don't do that in Lexington.
Yeah.
Because it can give you that icky feeling if the kid doesn't get it.
And something else that I noticed both on that website, but also just in general, when talking about student data privacy, another like look for teachers is if we're paying for a tool or if a tool offers a paid version, there will often be a difference in how they protect student data between the free version and the paid version. A lot of times tools are free because they use your data and they sell your data. You can pay for that protection. So that's something else for people to think about. And a lot of our more robust curriculum tools, we've moved towards paid products when it's possible, because they protect our data when we pay them to.
Now, the other thing, though, to be wary of is that just because we're paying for a tool does not mean that we
have make it
agreement. We're in a place in Lexington right now where we're trying to get more and more of these agreements signed so we can be more above board with what we're doing in terms of protecting our students' data privacy. And so I know that Tom Martelloni is still going back to old things that we've bought as a district to make sure that we have those things covered.
Yeah, I feel like this year has been an excellent year for paying attention to student data privacy in Lexington and really creating some better better ways of thinking about protecting student data and using larger resources like that consortium to work with other towns and work with the state to get support in this area. So, Howard, we are out of time. This is a very exciting conversation about student data privacy.
Always fun.
Something that I care deeply about, and as do you. So if people have questions, they can obviously reach out to their DLC. I think in the rest of this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the form that Tom Martellini's created to ask for access to a tool and have him work with a consortium to get the student data privacy agreement signed, that sort of thing. So, and we'll have some of those links in the show notes. So is there anything else you want to say in the last minute?
No, just that, you know, we want to do what's best for our kids. And if a tool is not approved right away, it's not because we don't like the tool, but because we want to make sure that we're protecting our kids as best we can.
Yeah. And in the moving environment of online tools, you know, this is an area that we're both like growing and learning about, but it's also an area where things change. So sometimes, unfortunately, a tool we might have used before, we don't use anymore, but that also works in reverse. The tool we might not have used before has changed how they take care of student data, and we might be able to use them in the future. So it's a moving target, just like all other technology things. So okay, cool. Thank you so much, Howard.
Thank you, Rachel. This is great.
All right, take it easy.
You too.
Hi, it's Anne here, and today I'm going to discuss our digital resources. We created the LPS Technology Resource website, which has videos and printable directions for many tech tools, including Screencastify, Edpuzzle, Google Meet, and more. On our front page, you'll see the DLC office hours schedule and the live PD schedule, as well as the form for submitting requests for software. You can find the link to our website on the Lex Communicate page under For Staff on any LPS webpage. Thanks for listening, and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to the Lex Tech in 10 podcast. Don't forget to reach out to any one of us or your building digital learning coach for questions and assistance. That's what we're here for. Also, check out our website, gg.gg/lextechin10, where you can find show notes and other resources. Do you have an idea for a future podcast? Would you like to be featured on a future podcast? Email us at lextechin10@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.